Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I continue to bring back all my favorite guests and hopefully yours. And today I am joined by Erica Ensign. Hello, Erica.
Hello. It is a pleasure to be back.
The pleasure is all mine, or perhaps all the listeners, because they get to hear both of us.
Ooh. Well, there's no accounting for taste.
That is true. I don't know. I know you listen to, you edit a lot of podcasts and you're on a lot of podcasts. This is completely random question that popped into my head, though. How do you feel about listening to your own voice at this point?
It has been so many years that it does not bother me at all anymore. It did at first, as tends to be the case, but I got over it pretty fast. Because, yes, I was the editor of my own podcast, which was weekly, and I had to get over that real fast.
Oh, man. It is when you, for listeners who haven't started their own podcast yet, I'm assuming there are like two or three of them. The first time you listen to your recorded voice for a long time, you are horrified.
Yeah, it's weird.
Because you think, I don't sound like that, because you don't sound like that to yourself, because, you know, your voice is conducted through your bone and it just sounds different to yourself. But when
various
you listen
bones.
To a recording, yeah, it's like, exactly. it's no good. But let me assure you, dear listener, your voice sounds fine. It's okay.
I hope my voice sounds fine to the editor, because I'm married to him.
Oh, that's true. Well, I'm sure he hears your voice that way all the time.
That's so true.
I'm sure that was one of your many lovely attributes that led to your relationship.
Yeah, probably. I hope.
I imagine. Now, before we get off even further track, why don't you tell the people who are listening, if anyone is still listening, a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Well, as you already alluded to, I am a podcaster. My sort of primary podcast previously was a Doctor Who podcast, which is currently on hiatus and may or may not come back Doctor Who style, as you do. But I am all over the Incomparable Network. This show on the Mothership show from time to time. I'm on Agents of Smooch, and I'm on Total Party Kill with you quite a bit. And I also tend to edit that one as well. So I get to hear my own voice doing character voices occasionally.
Oh, no.
That's another level of weird.
Well, I imagine I have never edited a Total Party Kill, and I have only appeared as a player a few times. But I would imagine another layer of listening to Total Party Kill is thinking, why did we do that?
I have been known to laugh out loud, like guffaw, as I'm editing that podcast. Steven has just gotten used to it.
Oh, D&D.
Yep.
But we're not here to talk about D&D. That is, we are actually later this week, we're talking about D&D on a different podcast.
Yes, yeah.
But we are here to talk about Star Trek, a specific episode of Star Trek, even season 6, episode 9, The Voyager Conspiracy from Voyager, as
surprise,
you might
surprise.
Imagine. I suppose it could have been a different one.
That's true.
It could be a fairly generic title. I had never seen this episode, so I assumed this episode would include semi-frequent guest star Reginald Barclay, which is not the actor's name, Dwight.
I'm blanking on it, but I know I know who you mean.
But it does not. Mm-mm. So, which was sad for me only because he's one of my favorite Star Trek characters. But before we delve into that, Erica, tell me, what are your thoughts about Voyager? Before you fired this up, what did you think when you heard, oh, a Voyager episode?
Honestly, my gut reaction was, oh, this will be interesting, because I only watched part, I think, of the first season or maybe into the second season of Voyager when it was originally on. I hit the episode where giant space sperm attacked the Voyager and I noped out. It's like that's enough for me. and I had not like grown attached to any of the characters. So I had never seen a Seven of Nine episode of Voyager before. I have watched all of Picard, so I have seen the later version of her. So it was really fascinating to go back and see an actual episode that had Jerry Ryan playing the younger version of this character.
Yes, and I forget when she joins the cast, so I don't know how seven of 90 she is. I mean, she's always seven of nine, but the, you know, mm-hmm. she has an arc where she becomes less Borgy and more human-y.
As I mean, they mentioned the star date when she joined, but that doesn't mean anything to me.
And I'm sure somebody there is yelling at whatever they device they listen to podcasts on, saying it was, you know, season four or whatever.
It might be the editor.
Oh, it could be, but I do not remember. I will say, I've said this before, I'll say it again. My two favorite characters on Voyager, Seven of Nine and Janeway, and they have a great relationship. And this episode, well, I don't know if this is a great episode of Voyager, but it highlights their relationship, which is always a good thing.
I actually think this is a great episode of Voyager. Oh, if you plopped you me go. Down and just showed me this, I'd be like, wow, why does Voyager get such stick from so many people? This is really interesting. With the exception of the like huge dangling threads that they leave at the end of the episode. But other than that, I was really into it.
Well, I think my problem with it was mostly that it just felt like Seven of Nine is watching Fox News, and it was too real.
Oh yeah,
to me. It was,
after watching it with my spouse, editor Steven, we were just like, "Yeah, so this is basically Seven of Nine joins a QAnon Facebook group." Like that's kind of what
basically. So it is a very interesting idea, and I think it's well executed. But I think it just made me uncomfortable because it made me sad. That
the timing was less than ideal, yes. For sure.
Mm-hmm. And people are just so easily lured into these conspiracy theories, which is the whole point of this episode.
Yep.
Right? That because, you know, we are at our basic level. One of the best things that our silly brains do is recognize patterns, mm-hmm. which is generally great. But then it just kind of creates patterns that aren't actually there, which is why, you know, you see things in clouds and things because there's nothing there. But your brain is just like, there have to be patterns. Uh-huh. And so Seven of Nine's Borg enhanced brain was like, there must be patterns to all of this data.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe multiple patterns, conflicting patterns. They all seem plausible.
Just like at one point, a cloud looks like a bunny. And then suddenly it's like, no, wait, it looks like a puppy. Like same mm-hmm. cloud. Maybe it hasn't even moved. And yet different pattern.
That's right. So I did like my well, we'll get into it. I had one question about this episode, but it also includes Naomi Wildman, who I enjoy, who's a child on Voyager and has a nice relationship with Seven of Nine. And she kind of wants to be she looks up to Seven of Nine. They hang out. Seven of Nine is not touchy feely. She's not like the mm-hmm. warmest person in the world, which. If you have been around children a lot, you know that there is a certain type of child who, much like cats know the person in the room.
I know exactly where you're going.
Do not like people, right? Or do not like the person in the room who doesn't like cats. So they're like, oh, I will sit on that person.
Yep.
Some children recognize the person who doesn't really like children and just are like, you're going to be my best friend and there's nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the flavor of Naomi Wildman and Seven of Nine, although I think Seven of Nine actually does like Naomi, but she puts up this kind of, mm-hmm. you know, this wall because she doesn't want to.
I think it's because she doesn't know how to interact.
Well, that's true.
And I mean, she wouldn't have had a lot of examples of that probably on Voyager, especially like she's doing a lot of work and stuff. I'm sure there are some, obviously there's at least one kid, there's probably more, but it's not like she grew up around other kids. I don't know. I assume she was young when she was taken. I'm not entirely sure about her background, but I will say that I do think that this episode is a great random episode to watch because it did such a masterful job of giving me all of the information that I needed to know about the backgrounds of these characters and what they had been doing mm-hmm. for these last 5 years. I feel like I didn't even really need to have seen the few episodes at the beginning of the show. I could have just sort of known the premise of it. And this episode laid out, like, here is who I am. This is where I came from. This is how I joined the crew. And, you know, even like I mentioned, listing off different star dates and things that happened on those star dates. I was like, I am getting the whole picture here. This is fantastic.
Would have been more useful if she listed off episode numbers just so you could go and watch. She'd be like, oh, that sounds interesting. Which episode was that?
Scott, are you telling me that there's not a correlation between those star dates and the episode numbers?
There is not, although I'm sure Memory Alpha, if you put in the star date, it would tell you what episodes take place okay. on what star dates. So you can find it out. And there are websites that will tell you convert star dates to regular dates as well, if you're nice. Interested in such things.
Oh, fandom, I love you so much.
So this, we get a little teaser, very short teaser, but basically it sets up the fact that, well, they're setting up the whole Naomi 7 of 9 relationship so that there's a scene much later in the episode that makes you think something's not quite right in case you are completely oblivious. Because I feel like that was unnecessary, but whatever. So they're friends. She wants to play a game, but 7 of 9 is busy because 7 of 9 is modifying her alcove to use some Borg technology, a cortical processing subunit, to ingest large amounts of data as she's sleeping, which right off the bat, I thought, that seems like a bad idea.
I had a feeling it was going to go wrong.
Yes. It would be a very short episode if the next thing is like, well, it's great. Goodbye. So Seven is very busy. She can't play with Naomi, but she promises that she'll play later. And then this also kind of this, I think this episode is also, I'm raising it in my estimation. Because it also does something very good that kind of bothered me as I was watching Voyager for the first time. Because there's this interesting tension, right? Voyager, they want to get home. Janeway says, in this episode, she's like, my only mission is to get us home. And yet, say this a number of times, they're explorers. So they just keep going to random places along the way, which when you think about it, they really probably shouldn't be doing. They should just be getting home.
I mean, maybe, except the thing is, like, as explorers and as, you know, probably students of Star Trek episodes past, they probably realize that in the course of exploration, sometimes you can find shortcuts, which is exactly what happened in this episode. They managed to cut 3 whole years off of their trip because of the thing that they went to explore. So I too like to joke about that idea that they go off and explore things and don't just go straight home. But fundamentally, I don't actually have a problem with it because I think it is actually a smart thing to do, to go towards stuff where there are people and societies and technology, because that's probably statistically going to give you a better shot at, you know, getting home sooner than just, you know, booking it straight there.
I think you're right. And I often say that I think Captain Janeway is probably the, like, in universe, like, the best actual captain that we have in Star Trek. And I think part of her reasoning is, yes, she was a science officer, so she's interested in these sorts of things. But she also knows that she has a crew of people that need to be busy and not thinking constantly about the fact that they are stranded a long way from home and it'll take them forever to get home and they may not make it. So giving them, like, appealing to the reasons why they joined Starfleet makes a lot of sense as well. Even if they don't find shortcuts, they at least stay busy because they discover other things. And so it makes sense, but it is funny. Another thing that's funny is that the critical role that photonic fleas play in this episode, which I think is completely ridiculous. So, but I think it was meant to be ridiculous.
Yeah, that being right about something ridiculous that can then lead you down such a path.
Exactly. So she ingests a bunch of information in, like, her test run, and she starts making these kind of links, and she says, you know, several months ago, Neelix bought some spices and Carrie Kim was fixing the replicator, and clearly there was photonic fleas and they jumped from the spices to the replicator, and that's why our power grid is flickering. And B'Elanna Torres is like, that is ridiculous. No, thank you.
But she was right.
But she was right. And I know she was 7 of 9. Another thing that I enjoy about this episode, and they continue to do it in Voyager, is how often 7 of 9 just summons people to her without any
explanation. I thought that was fascinating.
Like, everybody just gets called to 7 of 9 and they just show up immediately.
Do you know if other characters do that? Like, does Harry Kim, like, find himself someplace else and say, you know, Commander Chakotay, please come see me, and he just hops to it?
No. Okay. No one other than Janeway can do that. Usually it's a rank thing, right? You have the people who are below you will come to you. But 7 of 9
why?
Defies all rank.
I just Yeah, because that did stand out to me, and I didn't know if it was something that was just sort of built into the story. Like, that was one thing that I found myself wondering about and not knowing because I hadn't seen previous episodes. But if it's just a random funny thing, then I'm proud of myself for noticing it, I guess.
There you go. And I think it speaks to what you said earlier, that, you know, Seven of Nine is kind of learning these human niceties. And so she's used to being a drone. And basically, you know, you just, if you have something that you need to share with the collective, you just share it. And, you know, so she has something that she wants to someone to look at. So she says, come here and look at this. And then they do. And yeah, so she like calls Torres like at 2 a.m. or something and says, I think there are photonic fleas in the replicator. Or actually, she doesn't even tell her. She says, come here so I can tell you this. And she does. And then Torres is like, no, I don't think that's right. And so she makes her go to the captain. So they go to the captain, and Captain Janeway is like, that doesn't really sound like it is going to be true. And she looks at Tuvok, and Tuvok is like, well, it's certainly logical.
There you go. Yep.
But he thinks it's also not true. But there's only one way to find out. And that's what, you know, Janeway, a master of the scientific method, says we must check it out to see if it's true. And guess what?
Fleas.
Photonic fleas all over the place. And they... I don't know what they do. They, like,
they
gather
find a
them
new
into
home
a jar.
They like, do. I was just assuming that they would just fumigate that whole corridor. And no, apparently not. Photonic fleas, maybe they're like a protected species or something. Or maybe, well, you know, this was one of those plot threads that a writer leaves dangling for future writers to pick up. And they're, you know, I don't remember hearing about a Voyager episode about photonic fleas, but there could have been one.
It wouldn't surprise me if there was one, but I don't know if there was or not. And so now this plays a critical role in this episode, though, right? Because this crazy theory turns out to be true. Mm-hmm. So that makes Seven of Nine trust her own process. And that makes everyone else say, well, maybe, you know, maybe she knows what she's talking about. Seven of Nine is not known for her flights of fancy. So perhaps everything's kosher. Yep. Guess what? Everything's not kosher. Now she's ingesting even more data, and she just starts coming up with all kinds of theories. Although, this is another theory, actually. So they come across this thing, this catapult, with an alien who's building this catapult that he thinks can shoot people across great distances in very short amount of time. The perfect thing for Voyager to want to be interested in. So Voyager offers to help fix it because it's not working, or not fix it, but I guess like refine it and make it work. And he's like, oh, you can't go onto it, it's too dangerous. Even I won't even go onto it, it's too dangerous, so we have to do it remotely. Seven of Nine says, oh, I know what's happening. I've ingested a bunch of this data, and it leads me to believe that it's using the same kind of energy that the thing that knocked Voyager into the Delta Quadrant was using. And everyone's like, that's crazy. Seven of Nine. And guess what? She's right again.
Yep. And this was another place where I thought they did a really good job of giving me the information that I needed, because I certainly would not have known what a Tetrion reactor was. And, you know, probably had I been watching the show all this time, I would not have remembered or even maybe known that a Tetrion reactor was involved in the original, like how they got knocked off course. And like I said, I've seen those episodes at the beginning, but I don't remember them at all. So this was they did a nice job of talking about it and reminding me of what had happened without really obnoxious dialogue, which is one of my like least favorite things, is the, as you know, Bob sort of dialogue where it's just like, you know, somebody telling somebody else things that they already know. None of it felt like that to me, because Seven of Nine is laying out her reasoning, just like she did for the fleas. Like, this is a thing that happened, and then here's this other thing that's related in this way, and here's this other thing that's related in this way, and therefore I believe this. So it didn't come off as lecturing me about something that I should have already known. It just sounded like a character saying the things that character would naturally say in that situation. So I was very impressed at how skillfully that was handled in this episode.
Yes, I thought it was a very clever mechanic to get a whole bunch of information across to people. And this is where, so she's right about the reactor being there. But then she says, well, clearly it must be the same from the same caretaker that Voyager encountered for reasons. And Janeway's like, well, you were right about the reactor, but I'm not sure if you're right about that, because we really done blowed that up pretty good. And Seven of Nine's like, well, I mean, the only thing I can do is obsessively consult the logs.
And Neelix.
Oh, Neelix. That's right. Neelix, she's looking at the logs. She can't find what she needs. She goes to Neelix and he's like, oh, I had a ship there. I have logs. You can use them.
Yeah. And so mine aren't corrupted like these ones are.
That's right. Not suspiciously corrupted. Mm-hmm. See, this is, she's adding all of these things to her conspiracy. The only thing this episode was missing was a big board.
Yarn board.
With, yarn board, exactly. It did not have one of those, but I guess Astrometrics was her yarn board.
Yeah, I mean, she kind of had that yarn board in her own head. This is the iPod version of the record player. That's, you know, the brain version of the yarn board. It's all up there.
Mm-hmm. And so she looks at the additional data, and she thinks she sees a tractor beam taking out one of the reactors. She also thinks it's suspicious that Voyager used a particular weapon that they don't carry, or isn't in the normal standard array of weaponry. And she thinks it's suspicious that Tuvok used it, like overclocked it, basically, and really, really blew it up. So she goes to talk to Tuvok, and Tuvok's like, yes, I did that because Captain Janeway wanted me to really blow it up. So I thought, I will really blow this up.
Yeah, he used exactly twice as much as whatever was supposedly needed, which, you know, exactly twice as much. That sounds like a perfectly logical number to jump to, I guess.
Very Vulcan-y. You want it really, you want to ensure that it is blown up. I will calculate the exact amount we need and I will double it.
Yep.
There you go. Which seems reasonable, but to Seven of Nine's kind of data addled mind, she thinks that Tuvok is lying to her and is some kind of, you know, sleeper agent for
somebody.
She has a lot of theories about it's unclear about how Tuvok fits in, but he does fit in each one. Because he was, in fact, a sleeper agent at one point.
Which I probably would have known had I remembered the beginning of the show, but I certainly didn't hear. So this was, again, it was like, oh, wow, that's an interesting little piece of information. Thank you. Mm-hmm. This is a great starter episode for Voyager.
And then she, in her long series of summoning people, she summons Chakotay to Astrometrics, and she tells the computer to seal the room and turn off all the sensors.
Gasp.
I know. And then she says, oh, Chakotay, Voyager is not here by accident. And he's like, what are you talking about? She's like, we've been sent here on purpose. And he says, okay, well, who sent us here? And she says, Captain Janeway. Dun, dun, dun.
Commercial break.
That's right. And then Chakotay's like, well, that's ridiculous, Seven of Nine. But what this episode, another thing this episode does very well is, and something I think Voyager kind of dropped super early that I would have liked, is the tension between the two crews, right? There's the Voyager crew, like the Starfleet crew, and then the Maquis crew, who shouldn't really trust the Starfleet crew, but, you know, they're in this situation where they all need to work together, but there should be a little bit of simmering resentment because Starfleet's not very nice to the Maquis. The Maquis are kind of seen as terrorists, so it's all kind of, but that's like after a couple of episodes, it's like, yeah, we're all one big happy family. And in this episode, even though Chakotay and Captain Janeway have worked together and trust each other greatly, it's just an interesting look at how easy and seductive conspiracy theories are, especially if they are coming from someone you trust, and especially if they are appealing to kind of an unconscious bias that you might have, right?
Yep.
So, because I imagine that they, you know, even though Chakotay and Seven of Janeway trust each other, they work together, there's still that, you know, they still have that history. So there's that tiny little bit of like, well, maybe Chakotay's just biding his time. And Chakotay probably thinks of Janeway, well, maybe she doesn't really trust us, and then maybe I shouldn't trust her, right? So I think it's interesting that it just kind of appeals to all of those things. So I think that, you know, whoever wrote this episode was well-versed in how conspiracy theories work, I think.
Yeah, totally. And also another thing that usually pops up on a lot of TV shows, especially from sort of this era, actually it still happens, is when plot moves forward because characters don't talk to each other about things mm-hmm. that they should talk to each other about. And I feel like they nicely sidestep that issue because in this case, there's just enough quote-unquote evidence, you know, there are enough facts that Seven of Nine has managed to string together to plant that seed of doubt, like you said, in a convincing way for somebody who has these unconscious or maybe even conscious biases, mm-hmm. that he doesn't just go straight back to her and say, hey, what's what? Like, this is something Seven of Nine saying. It's pretty wacky. We should probably check it out. No, he not only doesn't tell a captain about this, but he goes to Milana and says, can you do this thing wrong so that it will take extra long so we can kind of figure things out. So he actually takes some concrete action to ensure that he has sort of more time to, I guess, think about it or investigate or do mm-hmm. whatever. And I buy it. Like it makes sense to me. It doesn't have that feeling of, oh, I'm going to not talk to her for no good reason just to move the plot forward. There was some good reasoning underneath all of that. So again, thumbs up to the writer.
And I think that it was, so basically Seven of Nine tells Chakotay, well, you know, we're here because Janeway wants to invade the Delta Quadrants in cooperation with the Cardassians, and which is, you know, a completely ridiculous idea, but it is plausible enough that Chakotay's like, well, I do hate Cardassians, and Starfleet is, you know, a little suspect in
making
my past.
Me sketchy.
Yeah, so I need more time to think about that. So I really like the fact that Chakotay didn't just say, I believe you, Seven of Nine. Yes. He's like, maybe I need more time to think about this. And so he then, you know, he wrangles B'Elanna in, who once again is like, that's ridiculous. But she trusts Chakotay so much that she's like, okay, you think that it is important. I will do that. So that's another kind of layer, like playing all these relationships and mm-hmm. and doing a really good job of that. Because, you know, I think at no point does Torres really believe what Seven is talking about. But she is like, okay, Chakotay, I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. You're my guy. So I will do this. But it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it really is. Like at the time I was watching it, just I had no idea what direction it was going to go. But the idea that this particular, reactor got pushed through subspace by a tractor beam to land here and then have Voyager somehow end up here like later on, it really is ridiculous. But I didn't think it was quite as ridiculous because I was, you know, I was almost buying what 709 was selling because she was selling mm-hmm. it so well, you know, for a moment at least anyway.
Yes. And so for a moment, you think, OK, well, this seems ridiculous, but she has all this kind of circumstantial evidence. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll see what happens. And then the next scene is her using that same exact evidence to present to Captain Janeway and telling her that Chakotay is trying to foster a mutiny. And here's all the same evidence that I've given Chakotay to tell him that you are, you know, trying to invade the Delta Quadrant. But now I'm going to turn it on its side a little bit to convince you that bad things are afoot. And Janeway is like, that's ridiculous. You're building, you're building castles in the air. but then she once again, and I think this is a very convincing thing, is like she just lists all these things, 709 lists all these things that could be, when taken together, maybe build into this story that she's telling. And Janeway's like, well, I don't know, maybe. And we as viewers now are like, okay, obviously. Mm-hmm. We knew something was up, but now you know, okay, she's using the same exact evidence to do two different things. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And to further the point, for the people who are maybe confused, this is where we get the scene where she basically accuses Naomi Wildman of being a traitor or...
That's right. I almost forgot about that. That was bananas and kind of fun.
It was a fun scene. But that's the scene. Like every once in a while when I'm watching shows, I think, okay, this is the scene where they're afraid that the people who are watching are not getting what they're doing. So they need to put in a scene that says, okay, here, just so you know.
It did feel a bit like an exclamation point.
Yes.
And I'm not always a big fan of child actors, but I thought that kid did a great job of just being completely baffled. Like, what are you talking about, like, lady?
I just want to play a game with you. And now, well, now we're at this interesting thing where Janeway and Chakotay aren't telling each other their suspicions, and they're looking at each other and they're like, I don't know. They do eventually, to your point, tell each other, well, you know, Seven of Nine told me that you're invading the Delta Quadrant. And Janeway's like, well, Seven of Nine told me that you're trying to kill me, basically. And they're like, I didn't do that. And so they say, get the doctor down here to see what's happening. And turns out, Erica, you're not going to believe this.
What?
But Seven of Nine's a little wacky because of all of the data. She's downloaded more data than her non-Borg enhanced brain can handle.
My goodness.
It's trying to kind of figure out what's happening. And it's just kind of going crazy.
Pattern recognition to the nth degree.
It's too much. Mm-hmm. But she goes off. They have fixed the catapult. Seven of Nine wants to destroy it because she thinks someone's going to use it for bad things. So she steals the Delta Flyer, flies off to destroy this catapult.
Oh, yeah, because at the end, she discovers that it's neither of those conspiracy theories. It's the fact that you just wanted to come and find me,
Seven
of Nine, and take me back to be dissected by Starfleet. It's just like, that actually kind of broke my heart a little bit. Like, I was just really sad for her in that moment.
It is sad. And also another ridiculous theory, because Starfleet has plenty of Borg that they could dissect. There's no need to get Seven of Nine to dissect her. But she's like, I must get escape and make sure that Voyager never gets back to the Alpha Quadrant. Mm-hmm. And so she flies off, and then we have what I think is the best scene in the entire show, mm-hmm. where Janeway beams over. Seven of Nine is a great character because she not only does she steal the Delta Flyer, but she thinks to misalign the targeting sensors before she leaves, mm-hmm. so they can't actually hit her, which is brilliant.
And do something to her own personal signature so she can't be beamed out.
Exactly. So she's like, you're not getting me. Janeway's like, well, beam me over. And Chakotay's like, I'm coming with you. And she's like, no, you're not. It's just me.
Which was the right call.
Yes, because what Janeway recognizes is the only way that I can possibly have a hope of getting through to Seven of Nine is to basically do the same thing she's doing and show her all the evidence about why we're not trying to dissect her, why she's, you know, just reading into all this stuff, and how I have spent a lot of time trying to help her. What hit me the hardest was when, throughout this episode, as you mentioned, Erica, she's listing star dates, yep. Seven of Nine's listing star dates and of things that have happened. And Janeway starts to do the same thing. And she lists, you know, some random star date. And she says, the first time Seven of Nine says thank you to me.
That's so nice. Wow.
She remembered that. And then to make it even a perfect moment, even better, Seven of Nine says, you got the date wrong.
You know, and I had to wonder, like, just the fact that I don't know a lot about Captain Janeway because I didn't continue watching the show, but people continually speak very highly of her. I was really impressed by her just being able to rattle off all of those star dates. Like, this is a very, very smart lady who mm-hmm. knows all of this stuff. And part of me wonders, and this is totally headcanon, but part of me wonders if she got the date wrong on purpose to then, ooh, like, sort of like, you know, to give an opening for Seven of Nine to then come back with something, with her own memory of it, to sort of, you know, emotionally manipulate her a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like that headcanon, and I will adopt it as my own.
All right. Yes.
And so that's a great scene, and she convinces Seven of Nine that she should come back to the ship, and that they're everybody's friends, and they want to help her, which is great. And then the catapult works. which we, oh, and I wanted to mention the alien. I really like the alien look of this alien. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the name of the alien, but he looked really cool.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of him either, but his voice sounded really familiar to me. I looked him up and he's just been in like one episode of a billion things, or like two episodes. Mm. So I feel like I have seen him and heard his voice in other things just enough to be sort of familiar, which was kind of nice because it then made me extra happy that he ended up not being, you know, a conspiracy addled bad guy in any way. Mm-hmm. He just was a dude who wanted to get home.
And built this thing that he thinks would work. Yes, played by a guy named Albie Selznick.
I wonder if he's related to David O. Selznick.
Oh, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's been in a million things. Yep. And so the Voyager is 3 years closer to home. Hooray. I forget what happens at the end there. Naomi and Seven of Nine
play
the game that Naomi has been wanting to play. And, oh, we didn't mention this, but Chakotay and Janeway throughout the episode have been having candlelight dinners, which I thought was an interesting choice.
Like, wow.
but okay, because they don't have a romantic relationship.
I know a lot of people who ship them. And now I don't know much about this show, but I do know a lot of people who there are different shippers. There are people who ship, I know, Seven of Nine and Janeway, and then there are people who like very seriously ship Chakotay and Janeway. And I was like, I was watching it sort of with an eye to that, and I was like, you know, both camps of shippers have plenty of stuff in this episode to thumbs up, but I felt like the most blatant was the candlelight dinner part, and I was like, okay, now I see why. Gotcha.
Yeah, because they play the scene as though it is, you know, two coworkers having dinner, like, you know, long-term coworkers who are friends, colleagues having dinner, but in a very romantic setting.
And I mean, she's cooking for him and trying a real recipe that she has never tried before. And I don't know if it did read as somewhat on the border of romance to me, knowing nothing except for the fact that some people ship them.
See, this is a conspiracy theory within a conspiracy theory. Yep. That's what's going on. And they have dinner again, and they feel a little guilty for, you know, buying into conspiracies, even for a moment, about the other. And they agree to never stop trusting one another. So it's a nice way to end the episode. But talk is cheap, Janeway and Chakotay. And that is it. You know, this episode, what did you think? It was your first dip back into to Voyager.
I really liked it, except for, so in the evidence, quote unquote evidence that she lays out, like, I feel like there's never a hint in the show that any of the information that she is stating is false. Like, Seven of Nine is stating things that happened, and she's found actual information. I noticed that in, I think it was the Wikipedia entry, the word evidence is in quotes. And I was like, well, okay, that makes sense, because it's not actually evidence of anything, but it is information that is factual information. And it is, you know, apparently factual information that it's a Tetrion reactor, and that with the information from Neelix's ship, she is able to see what looks like a tractor beam. We see that. We see that multiple times. That's not something that's made up. So there is potentially an actual cloaked ship there that uses a tractor beam. And there's definitely, you know, like, it's enough, whatever the explosive stuff is, to rip a hole in subspace. So the implication is that the Tetrion reactor that is used in this big slingshot thing is potentially the actual Tetrion reactor that was the caretaker's way back in the beginning. And it's never followed up on. It's like, okay, none of these conspiracy theories were actually correct about it, but how did it get there? And I, again, have not watched the rest of Voyager, but Steven has seen all of Voyager, and I watched this with him, and he was just like, and it was like 10 minutes after the episode ended, and we were both like, wow, that was a good episode. Steven was like, I forgot this one. This was pretty good. And then 10 minutes later, we're starting to build some Lego together, and he turns to me and he goes, wait a minute. What about that reactor and the tractor beam? So, like, we looked up online, we double checked, and yeah, just left hanging. And he certainly didn't have any memories of them coming back to that. So, huh? That's Great episode, but huh? That's how I feel about it.
And my problem with this episode at a similar level is they have the plans for this catapult. So why don't they just build another one?
I know they need Scott, another hole. Thanks.
Now, they need that special reactor to power it, so that could
That's
be a problem.
True.
But other than that, I feel like maybe you should just start building these things and just leaving them across the expanse of the
but
Delta
you know
Quadrant
what?
And get home.
The fact that it requires the the Tetrion reactor. I love technobabble. It's great. I'm not being sarcastic. I genuinely do. I think it's fantastic. But so the fact that you need a Tetrion reactor in order to get this thing to work, and the only Tetrion reactor that we actually know of in this entire probably franchise is this one that came through subspace to land way out here in the Delta Quadrant. Like, I feel like that is a reasonable stopper for them to not just be building them left, right, and center. It would be a nice thing for a future writer to potentially pick up on. Like, we should, you know, every once in a while, we should be on a lookout for a Tetrion reactor, because then we could build one of those slingshots. But yeah, still, I hadn't thought of that. Thanks.
Oh, I'm sorry. But these are minor quibbles on overall. And I know I said at the beginning, I'm not sure if it was a great episode. I'm still not sure if it was a great episode, but it's a very good episode of Voyager.
Yeah, very solid.
Yes, I enjoyed it greatly. It's a great 7 of 9 Janeway episode. They are usually my only, it gets a couple of demerits only because the Doctor isn't in it much. But
yeah, I was a little disappointed in that too, because I remember liking him. We could have had more Doctor time and less Neelix.
Oh, Neelix.
After it was done, Steven just looked over at me and shook his head. He's just like, Neelix knows everything. He's like, Neelix is the catch-all. He's an expert in literally everything. Steven just sounded so upset when he was saying this. I was like, gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but I was talking in a recent episode of Random Trek, singing the praises of Captain Janeway, and in that episode we see her even using Neelix to full advantage and making him feel like a full part of the crew. And, so that's how good a captain she is.
Good
even with
captain.
Neelix, she can find some redeeming qualities and put them to use.
Wow, that's impressive.
It is impressive. I don't care for Neelix. There are many. Well, that's my problem with Voyager. There are a number of characters that I don't like on Voyager, but there are some great all-time favorite characters on Voyager. And speaking of all-time favorite characters, Erica, you're one of my all-time favorite characters.
Aw, back at you,
Thank you
Scott.
For joining me on my silly little podcast to talk about Voyager.
It was a delight.